I don't find that the detail is helpful because, first of all, the problem is that the exemption claims overlap. You can't tell where one begins and the other ends. The Vaughan Index is not helpful because it does not correlate the exemptions claimed to particular pages or particular portions of documents. You can't tell what is mean. The impression is given. The normal wording is this document was withheld pursuant to exemptions 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6, or some variation of that. Well, does exemption 1 apply to everything? Does exemption 3 apply to everything? We don't know. We can't tell. The record is simply insufficient. And we now have two examples where we know for certain the reliability of the Vaughan Declaration. As a result of this appeal, the CIA has been forced to disclose one record that it had been withholding under Exemption 2. And it consisted of three words, Office of Censorship. That was it. Now, there is no basis for it in Exemption 2. That reflects on the reliability of...
Wasn't that because of the intervening Supreme Court decision?
Yes, that was. But it wouldn't have, it wouldn't have been any different under the original decision either. I don't think it could have been sustained under Schwaner. There was just no basis for that Exemption 2 claim.
But that's water over the dam now.
Pardon?
That's water over the dam. What has that got to do?
Well, it's not water over the dam because the question is whether or not and to what extent Exemption 2 applies in the remaining documents at issue here and whether the other exemption claims are reliable. The second Exemption 2 document that was withheld in its entirety, the CIA has now said, whoops, we made an administrative error. We forgot to claim exemptions 1 and 3 and 6. Well, first of all, it's too late in the game to be raising those exemptions now. But in addition, questions are raised. If they're now claiming exemption 1 and they didn't originally, how did they represent that it was that it's classified? Was there a classification stamp on the document? Didn't that appear? What we have now is we've got two examples where the Vaughan Index claims have been put to test, and in one case they're dead in the water, in the other case they're trying to invent new exemptions to cover it. So the Vaughan Index is unreliable. It's also unreliable in another aspect, in that it doesn't indicate the number of pages in a document. Again and again and again, where you would find the number of pages listed, it simply says various. Nothing more. Various. You don't know whether you're talking about one page or 10 page or 15 pages. So how can you possibly tell what part of the document is exempt, what portion of the document is exempt under 1 or exemption 3 or exemption whatever? Problems, I think, the question with exemption 2 is whether or not there's got to be a remand in light of Milner. And I think the answer is clear. Because of the indiscriminate nature of the claims that were put forward, because you can't tell what portion of a document applied to which exemption claim, you've got to have a remand to determine the applicability of the Exemption 2 claims to all of the documents for which Exemption 2 was claimed, and they were many. They were at least over 200 out of the 294 documents. I think the original figure was 295. We're now down to 294 documents that were withheld in their entirety.
How many overlap, how many documents have claims under exemption two?
Virtually all of them. Virtually all of them. I haven't done an exact count, but.
Under exemption two and exemption three only?
They wouldn't be under exemption two and three alone. I think generally there would be.
There are none that fit that?
Pardon?
Are there any that fit that description?
I don't know that there are any that were under two and three alone. There were two that were under two alone. But I don't know with respect to two, whether there were any that just included three. I wanted to talk briefly about the search issue. Again, this is another issue as to which there's a material fact in dispute. The CIA has failed to systematically describe how failed to describe a system for locating documents of the type requested. What is notable is that you would think is that search would begin with a search of financial records. It's perhaps of some relevance here that when Richard Helms was director of the CIA, he destroyed all of the records on the MKUltra project, but forgot the financial records. There's no indication of any search of all of the whatever systems for financial and accounting records might have existed. The search is also perplexing because there are insufficient because the CIA simply claims that it has searched three directorates, for example. But the CIA's filing system is highly decentralized. It includes dozens and dozens of components. And unless you know which of those components and how many of those components have been searched, you don't know whether or not an adequate search has been conducted.
Mr. Lazar, you're way over your time.
Okay, could I make just one final point?
One sentence.
Pardon?
One sentence.
All right.
You're way over your time.
Pardon?
You're way over your time. So go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think that we've raised the issue of discovery on the search issue, and this case is like the early Weisberg cases, which sought critical records on the assassination of President Kennedy, and discovery was ordered in a precedent-setting case by this court, and I think that the same is warranted here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. Benton Peterson for the government. May it please the court. This court remanded this matter for the purpose of the CIA conducting two specific searches and expanding its explanation in three specific areas. The two searches contained searches of the NARA record file system and the operational file systems. Within the briefing and within the argument, there does not appear to be an argument with regard to the search of the NARA files. In terms of the expanded sections of explanation, those areas included the search for the allegedly missing monthly reports, the GLOMAR explanation, and also certain exemptions that were claimed by the CIA. Starting with the search for the operational files, the adequacy of the search operational files was made clear in the Nelson Declaration. This court instructed the CIA to search its operational files, and in response, the Nelson Declaration provided several factors that would establish that the adequacy of the search was sufficient. First, it indicated in paragraphs 27 through 39 that there was no time frame applied in the search. So the search of the operational files had a unending time frame. There was nothing, no limitation on the time. The exact search terms and methods were described in the, under paragraph 38 of the Nelson Declaration. The search results were described, and the criteria used to determine responsiveness was described, along with the repositories that were searched. DST, the DS, and the NCS operational files were all of the operational files that were searched because they indeed were the operational files defined under statute as operational files for the CIA. Among the search,
can I just take you to the Milner question and exemption two? Your position is that we don't need a remand, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
But there are lots and lots of documents that are covered by exemption two plus other exemptions. So how can we sort that out without a remand?
Well, in the appellant's discussion, the appellant attempted to muddy the waters a bit in the sense that it...
Aren't there a lot of documents that are covered by two and three and other exemptions?
There are not a lot of documents that are only covered by two, and there's not a lot of information.
No, that wasn't my question.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you, Your Honor.
Aren't there a lot of documents that are covered by two plus other exemptions?
There are, Your Honor. Okay.
Well, how can we sort that out at this point?
Well, in reviewing our documents under the light of Milner, in which brought to light, another searching and exhaustive review of the documents, we determined that there weren't any documents that were, there were two documents that were only covered by two that needed to be released.
Right.
The others, with all the information in there, there were other exemptions that applied that would not call for a remand because those exemptions are still valid, and it would be an exercise in futility just to remand it to determine if there was B2 information in there when, in fact, that same information was also exempted from production by another exemption. Reading the Vaughn Index...
Can we tell from the Vaughn Index what the reason is for each of the exemptions that are covered by these documents?
Yeah.
You see what I mean? I mean, how can we do that?
This is the...
It just says they're covered by exemptions blank, blank, and blank, so now we know we can't use two.
Right.
And we don't have a rationale from the agency on the other exemptions.
Right?
The
issue, the larger issue, the umbrella issue here, mm-hmm. is that as this court found in its previous review of the Vaughn Index provided by the CIA, it is not meant to be read in isolation. It is meant to be read in conjunction with the Nelson Declaration. And in conjunction with the Nelson Declaration, as this court found in the previous review of our Vaughn Index, which hasn't changed in format and form and substance since the last time it was here, it found that there was indeed enough information to identify the document and understand the basic exemption that is being put forth as a reason for withholding, which is what the court found sufficient. And that's exactly what happened in this round of Vaughn indexing, that it was indeed supplemented, the explanations were supplemented in the Nelson Declaration. And when read jointly, they provide sufficient information for this court and for the appellant to determine what the exemption was claimed, what documents we're talking about, and the basic understanding of what information we're saying would be withheld.
If you take out exemption two, do the other exemptions cover the entirety of the document?
That's what we found, Your Honor, with the exception of the documents that we turned over. And so we don't think a remand is necessary under these circumstances. And with regard to, and since we're on the topic, with regard to the one document where there wasn't the other exemptions applied at the time of initial production, that was in light of Milner a mistake. We understood that that was an error, that we didn't apply other exemptions that would have kept that same information from being withheld. We reviewed it as a result of our view of Milner, and we found that that was a pure mistake. And under this court's precedence under August versus FBI, there was, in that case, there were three reasons given for possible correction in terms of providing an exemption after production. And in that context, the August versus FBI indicated that a change in factual context, an interim development of legal doctrine, and pure mistake are reasons to allow an agency to assert exemptions after the production. And in this case, at least two of those apply and work together in a confluence to determine a mistake was made and that there needed to be action to correct that mistake, specifically the interim development in legal doctrine and the idea of the pure mistake happening early on in the process.
Peterson, I'm not sure how you can how we can avoid further efforts to disaggregate this. Let me give you an example. There's a document at page 624 of the Joint Appendix. And the agency asserted Exemption 2 and Exemption 6. And the description says that the redacted portions would, quote, reveal internal agency personnel practices, close quote, as well as, quote, personal interactions between Joannidis and third parties unrelated to his employment, the disclosure of which would constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy, close quote, of those third parties. So that's a B2 and then a B6 claim, right? Exemption 2 and then Exemption 6. But you didn't disclose any portion of the document. Now the Exemption 2 claim is gone.
Right.
But should we just make our own determination of what part is now no longer subject to exemption? I don't think so.
Well, we're claiming, but the idea, the argument from CIA is that under our review, we found that B6 would also cover the information that would have been withheld under B2. And if I'm reading from the correct page, Your Honor, it's 624 of the Joint Appendix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what the reading of the Vaughn Index in conjunction with the Nelson Declaration discussing the elements of B6 in the context would provide the court with sufficient information to understand that the document itself contained B6 information that actually covered the entirety of the document in addition to the B2 exemption claim. And so it's not a situation where if you get rid of B2 that there is segregable information in that document that needs to be released. We're saying that they both blank, that B6 blanketed the entire document, but there was also a B2 argument prior to Milner
so
that we made.
So the material that would reveal internal agency personnel practices would also, if disclosed, constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy?
Well, what
that's what you're saying,
basically. Well, what we're saying is that there's information there that could be both.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And so the information that would fall within B2 seems a little counterintuitive, but not impossible, that the information that would reveal internal agency personnel practices would also constitute an invasion of personal privacy of third parties?
Well, the information that is internal and for personnel reasons could also, for example, be dealing with a personnel record of, let's say, a healthcare issue. It's a personnel issue. It's a personnel record connected to payroll, connected to healthcare issues. But it could also be the case where that information would involve an unwarranted invasion of privacy.
Does that appear to be the case in this instance?
Without having the document in front of me, I can't say specifically, but I'm reading in conjunction with the Nelson Declaration where that would appear to be the case in this case. And in all other cases where there was an exertion of B2, there was another exertion of another exemption that over...
But the Nelson Declaration doesn't say explicitly, does it, that all of the material on that page is covered by both of the exemptions, or more materially, that right. All of it's covered by B6.
Your Honor, you're correct. It doesn't say that.
It says B2 and B6 apply.
It doesn't say that explicitly.
So if B2 applies to some and B6 to other portions of the document, then we need someone in the first instance, a further declaration to disaggregate it in light of the Supreme Court decision.
Well, under that hypothetical, Your Honor, you're correct. If there was B2 information that existed outside of...
No, if we can't tell whether there's B2 information that is there that's unprotected by B6.
Well, I think the fact that the words that B6 covers the whole page, if those words are not in what they're not in a sentence in the declaration,
right.
I believe that reading the declaration in conjunction would also provide you with enough information to understand the document's nature. And in that sense, you can make a determination that this document was...
I don't see the court making the determination when the agency hasn't. Do you? Any case where you got us doing that?
Well, we're not asking that the court make a determination that the agency hasn't. I think the agency has made the determination. I think that reading the declaration and the Vaughan Index in conjunction provides you with information.
Have you checked before this argument to make sure what you're saying here is accurate, which is that the exemptions other than B2 were intended to cover the whole document?
Well, this is
we're just relying on...
Your Honor.
Go ahead.
We specifically talked about this in that sense that we were... The effort was made to provide all B2 related information in light of Milner.
Right.
And
when you take out B2, was it understood, I guess what our questions are going to, that the other exemptions covered the entirety of the still withheld documents?
Well, let me say this, that my understanding is that there was not at the end of our review of the documents, there was an indication that there was no need for further production as a result of Milner and our withdrawal of the exertion of B2.
Who did that review?
This was the agency and...
Did Nelson do that?
I'm not certain if Nelson herself was involved with that particular review.
Well, prior to the decisions, Nelson goes through and invokes these exemptions.
Yes.
And somebody, it seems to me, somebody making an affidavit is going to have to tell us what still is exempt in the agency's view now that 2 is inapplicable.
I understand, Your Honor.
Your position then is, I take it, that because the government's position is that no remand is necessary, we should assume that what Nelson meant was that the other exemptions cover the entire document. Is that your position?
Not an assumption, Your Honor.
Where else would we get it?
I believe that, well, if the wording required is that B6 covers the entire document and B2 is superfluous, that's not found in this declaration due to the timing of this declaration and the timing of the Milner
Nor does it even just say both declarations apply to everything or B6 applies to everything and B2 to something. It doesn't tell us any of that.
It doesn't use those terms.
Is it standard practice when a variety of exemptions are asserted in a Vaughan Index that each covers the entire document?
That's not standard practice.
As far as
I'm aware, it's not standard practice. As far as I'm aware, I understand with this case that a review was made of the documents to determine if there was information we needed to produce as a result of the B2 withdrawal.
A post-Milner review.
Yes, yes. So I don't know what standard practice is, Your Honor, in other cases. I'm saying in this case, this happened to be a situation where there was a very searching review of the documents in order to find areas where B2 was exerted and that we could produce as a result of the Milner precedent.
But that happened after the district court's decision, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we don't really have anything in the record on that. It's just your representation.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's nothing put before the district court on this because of the timing of how it happened.
You don't have that one. Yeah, I want to ask you about a different group of records. Plaintiff challenges the invocation of Exemption 5 with respect to these 9 records that were found in the 2008 search?
Yes.
Okay. And the Nelson affidavit on 5 of those says they contain recommendations to decision makers regarding Jonitis's employment and suitability as a CIA employee. That's Joint Appendix 1. That's all it says, which seems to me to be exactly the kind of general, uninformative response that our previous decision found unacceptable.
With that, Your Honor, I think that the information...
And he shouldn't say anything. Nelson didn't say anything about... I don't think the affidavit says anything about the other 4 documents at all, right?
Well, with regard to the court's first point, in terms of actually responding to the court's instruction, the court asked the CIA or instructed the CIA to provide additional information with regard to that.
Yeah.
And in that regard, the Nelson Declaration does provide significantly more detail with regard to those documents. In particular, it talks about how this is an informational request from an investigator to a supervisor concerning the background investigation of Mr. Jonitis.
Well, is this sentence I read to you, is there more than that sentence? Contains recommendations to decision makers regarding Jonitis's employment and suitability as a CIA employee. Wasn't that it?
You're referring to?
The 5 documents.
Right, you're reading from a specific page on the.
Yeah.
Which page is the quote?
191. And then in our earlier opinion, you know, we said with respect to a similar thing that this language, and I'm reading from the previous affidavit, contains recommendations concerning the waiver of certain investigative methods that are protected by the deliberative process privilege. We thought that was insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm looking for is some explanation from you about why this explanation this time around is adequate given what we said in our prior decision.
Well, Your Honor, because this explanation, in the explanation itself, there are various factors that are revealed about these documents. First of all, that at their very heart, they're pre-decisional. A decision has not been made on Mr. Jonitis' security clearance yet. These are informationals sent back to the agency in order to determine next steps in that informational and decision process. This is the essence of a pre-decisional document. This is one of the crucial additions in the Nelson Declaration that wasn't there before that talks about why these documents are pre-decisional in nature and why they are of more of a personal opinion than a final agency decision.
Uh-huh. And what about the 4 that aren't explained at all?
You're referring to a specific number?
No, there were 9.
Yes.
Nelson talks about 5.
No,
I didn't see a reference to the explanation about the other four.
Right.
At least that's what the plaintiff said. He said he couldn't find it either.
Yeah. With regard to all the documents, the understanding that's in the declaration is that all those documents that were labeled under B5, the nine documents, they were of the same ilk, that they were pretending.
And how would we know that?
And I'm looking at the actual section and of the declaration.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that those page numbers.
That covers all of them?
If you read in conjunction with the Vaughan Index and the declaration itself, it should cover all of the documents that we're referring to as pre-decisional, that were referring to the suitability for Mr. Joannides in his role with the CIA. If they're not specifically mentioned within that.
Thank you. Mr. Lazar used up all your time, but you can have one more minute if you'd like it.
Mr. Lazar.
Yes.
Yes, Your Honors. I just had one brief point to make with regard to Judge Ginsburg's question about the document that had the B2 and B6 exemptions. The date of that document indicates that this was when Joannides was the liaison to the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Presumably, the document refers to him. His name apparently has been deleted, or it would seem that that's likely. He's dead, and there's an overriding public interest in the disclosure of information about him, particularly given the fact that we now know as a result of the remand, that as a result of the search of operational files after the remand, that he was inserted in a covert capacity into the proceedings with the House Select Committee on Assassinations. So there may be segregable information. He's dead. There's an overriding public interest. So Exemption 6 would not presumably apply to the entire document. But the key point, again, is that we don't know.
Pardon? Mr. Lazar, your time is up. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor.
Did you have something you wanted to ask?
No.
Okay. Case is submitted. Thank you both.